I'll be reading from Daniel chapter 6. As I sat down beside Dwayne, he says, "Good to see you." And I said, "Well, you know, it's good to see everyone that's here tonight. It's good to see Christian brethren and sisters. Sure, we'll have a blessing for being here tonight." Daniel chapter 6, verses 1 to 10. "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, 'We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God.' Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, 'King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, that it be not changed, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not.' Wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed, and gave thanks before his God, as he did aforetime." Say, let's kneel for prayer.
Thank Uncle Donald for his prayer on our behalf this evening, and you for praying as well. I was challenged and blessed by the sermon this morning. I think you were as well, and guess I'm not alone, but I know I have something to work on. I got work to do. And we continue to hopefully grow in our Christian walk and in our relationships. Well, the title of the message this evening is "Because He Believed in His God." The Great Wall of China is an amazing man-made wonder of the world. It was built along the northern borders of China to keep enemies from invading. The wall is made of stone and brick, tamped ground and wood and other materials, and it runs for thousands of miles, and in fact, there's variations to the amount of miles that it actually is. I read 4,000. There's some that think it's much, much longer when you consider all the different branches. Rather an amazing man-made creation, but a man-made wall. At any rate, it's somewhere in the area of 20 to 30 feet high. Again, that varies, and maybe about 20 feet wide. Some interesting things about that wall is that thousands and thousands of people died while working on that wall. As you can imagine, it would have taken a huge workforce. And simply for expediency and so on, they just buried them in between the wall and piled ground on them. And so it's known as the world's largest, or at least the longest, graveyard. And it seemed that great wall would provide security. foolproof security. It was too high to climb over, too thick to break down, and too long to go around. However, I read, and I'm assuming that this is accurate, during the first 100 years of that wall's existence, China was invaded 3 times. How did it happen? Not once did they climb over the wall, not once did they break it down, not once did they go around it. Rather, they simply bribed a gatekeeper who opened the gate of the wall, or one of the gates of the wall, and allowed the enemy to walk in. The lack of integrity in a gatekeeper took away the effectiveness of the wall. And one of the things that made Daniel so successful in his Christian walk, and we see it over and over and over again in the first 6 chapters here of Daniel, was his integrity. Integrity means honesty and trustworthiness, to mean what you say and to do what you say. Integrity means the state of being, or the whole person, the entire, complete, meaning that integrity in person involves the whole person. You see, it is possible to do acts of integrity, but at the same time lack integrity in one's heart. Like the story of the man I read about who, I believe it was Kentucky Fried Chicken, he went and ordered chicken and he got his box to go and it was full of money. It was the manager apparently had put the cash in to take to the bank and accidentally had given him that box. Out of honesty, he took it back. Manager said, "Well, bring your wife in here. We want to take a picture of you." To his dismay, he didn't want to do that because he was a married man and the woman with him wasn't his wife. You see, acts of integrity. It's possible to do acts of integrity, but at the same time lack integrity in one's heart. True integrity must be in one's heart, which then affects how one thinks and talks and acts. In other words, true integrity just doesn't happen, but it's a result of our heart condition. In Psalm 15:1, the questions are asked, "Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill?" And the psalmist David answers them in verse 2, and I believe in answering them, he defines integrity. He says, "He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth in his heart." Someone also has defined Christian integrity as the absence of compromise and the presence of biblical convictions. You see, every day we face decisions. Whether you realize it or not, today you did, tomorrow is if the Lord tarries and we live, we face decisions that mean we will either choose compromise or we will choose integrity. And here in chapter 6 of Daniel, we find again that Daniel was a man of uncompromising, impeccable integrity. The chapter opens with Daniel still holding a prominent government position. And however, the kingdom no longer belongs to the Babylonians. If you recall, at the end of chapter 5, Belshazzar, or King Belshazzar, was killed. The Medes and the Persians conquered Babylon, and now the kingdom is ruled by the Medo-Persians. And Daniel, at this point, is over 80 years old. But he was still a man of influence, being used of God. And even though the nation had changed, he was still being used by his God. You see, no nation can or could hinder God's work or God's plan or God's will from being carried out through this man of God who was a man of integrity. You see, that hasn't changed. Today, regardless of the nations, God's work and God's will always be carried out through his people who don't compromise biblical integrity. Well, verses 1 and 3, and if you want to have your Bibles open, you may want to. I didn't have the whole chapter read, but we'll try to get through the whole chapter rather quickly. But verses 1 to 3 define Daniel's position. King Darius had set up 120 princes over different areas of the kingdom, and these 120 then were responsible to three presidents, or were accountable to them, of whom Daniel was number one. Verse 3 tells us how Darius viewed Daniel, and just to reread and get our thoughts there, said, "Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm." An excellent spirit was in him. I don't think we should discount that. The thought is an excellent mind or excellent attitude. You know, attitude has a lot, or comes into play a lot, in the kind of Christian walk that we will walk. Daniel had an excellent spirit. Well, this fact that King Darius was aiming to promote Daniel and preferred him above the others didn't sit too well with the other presidents and all the princes. And verse 4 says that they tried to find some fault in Daniel concerning how he carried out his responsibilities in the kingdom. They came up empty. There was nothing. Daniel was blameless. And you know, it's interesting that a man of integrity will even be noticed, his integrity will be noticed by his enemies, as was the case here with Daniel. Look at verse 5, "Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God." It's like they said, the only thing we'll be able to find Daniel guilty of is that he's committed to his God. He's guilty of integrity. What a testimony. That's an incredible testimony. We can't find anything wrong with this guy's life, so the only way that we can get him is if we make up some new law that he's going to commit or be willing to disobey because he's so committed to his God. Well, how did Daniel really get to this point? Do you think that Daniel sat around thinking about, I wonder what all I can do to have this impeccable testimony? No, I don't think so. I'm sure it was important. But I believe that in Daniel's heart, he was committed to God. He was committed to a biblical integrity. And as a result of that, he had an impeccable testimony. Our focus need not be so much, if I will just do this and this and that, I'll have a testimony like Daniel's. Rather, if our focus is a heart that's committed to God and a heart that's committed to biblical integrity, the testimony's going to take care of itself. It'll happen. When we have a relationship with God through Jesus Christ and a heart that's committed to Him and a heart that's committed to following God's Word, we won't have to purposely do things to stand out. We will stand out in the society in which we live. When you or I is the person who won't swear or who won't talk in a distasteful way, who doesn't want to steal from his employer in any way, who desires to be faithful, when our actions are honorable, dependable, and respectful, all because of a heart that's committed to God and committed to integrity, we will stand out. We will. Like Daniel, may we also be guilty of being committed to our God and committed to biblical integrity. Well, in verses 6 to 9, we have the scheme of the jealous princes and the presidents that's put into place. And basically what they did was they stroked the ego of the king. The law they came up with was that no one could make a request of any god or any man for 30 days. And the only one to whom people could pray or ask something of was the king. In other words, King Darius was to be God for 30 days. That's basically what the law was. King Darius thought, that sounds pretty good. Boy, they think a lot of me. They want to make me God for 30 days. Sounds like a good law. The punishment, as we know, for not obeying this decree was to be thrown to the lions. And Darius, in his pride, signed this new decree, and it became a law that could not be changed, not even by the king, as was the case with the Medo-Persians. Verse 10, as Uncle Donald read there, gives us Daniel's response to the new law, and I reread it again for our thoughts to be there. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being opened in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. He didn't change anything. He still prayed with his windows opened. Would you have closed them? I think it would have went through my mind. I can still pray to God, but why do I got to have the windows open? Nobody has to see me. That's not how Daniel looked at it. Daniel had a consistent witness, a consistent testimony that he wasn't going to change. And in fact, Daniel's enemies, and I think this is interesting, his enemies were so much counting on Daniel to be like that, because they showed up to watch. They were counting on him to be consistent in his witness. Verse 11 tells us that they were there to watch him. I believe there's more significance here to Daniel praying than just the fact that he broke the law. Daniel's integrity was a result of being committed in his heart to God and being committed to biblical integrity, and also being committed to a personal prayer life. We can't discard that. It was key. We can't have the integrity of Daniel without the commitment to a personal prayer life with our Heavenly Father. It has to be there. Daniel, with his heart committed to God, regularly met with God through prayer, and he developed a personal walk with God involving his whole person, which resulted in such a great integrity. You see, it didn't just happen. It didn't just happen that Daniel was this great man of integrity. Well, Daniel didn't quit praying. He didn't compromise. Rather, he kept doing what had become his life. And I believe his thinking was he'd let the consequences in God's hands. See, no man's law could change Daniel's devotion to God, and none should be able to change ours. Because Daniel wouldn't compromise, his enemies got the results they wanted. It almost reminds me of some children, you know, when they're trying to get back at someone. He did what I wanted, and I'm going to go tell somebody. It's kind of what they reminded me of here. As they run back, or they go back to King Darius in verses 12 and 13, and basically say, "Didn't you sign a law making you a god? And wasn't it stated that anyone breaking it would be cast into a den of lions?" The king reaffirms it, and the fact that it couldn't be changed, and they had him. And then they told him about Daniel. They said, "Daniel, you know, that one who came as a captive from Judah, that one." Well, he prays 3 times a day. Look what verse 14, and the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. So I understand the custom was for the execution at that time to be done before nightfall. So he had only a little bit of time before nightfall to try to get Daniel off the hook. And he tried. King Darius did. And I believe here in the fact that he was so displeased with what happened, we find a lesson from King Darius, and that is this, that rash decisions that appeal to our egos become regrettable. Think about that. Rash decisions that appeal to our egos become regrettable. That's what happened to King Darius. Daniel had meant a lot to him. And King Darius tried to come up with a way to save Daniel's life or to save Daniel from the lions so much that in verse 15, the schemers reminded the king again that the law couldn't be changed. Then the king in verse 16 commanded and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. It's kind of interesting. Did he really believe it? Word continually, he says, thou servest, whom thou servest continually. Note the consistency of Daniel's testimony of his witness before the king. The king knew it. He said, thy God, whom thou servest continually. You see, Daniel's witness had influenced King Darius to at least to the point where it gave King Darius the thought, you know what? This God of his might be able to deliver him. Well, verses 17 to 18 tells us that the den of lions was sealed. There was no way that Daniel could get out. And I believe that the king had what was probably a horrible night for him. Those verses tell us that he fasted. He didn't take any enjoyment in music. He refused any entertainment. And he couldn't sleep. And finally, the morning came and the king had waited long enough. Verse 19, the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. I think the fact that he went in haste implies that there was a little faith there that maybe God had delivered Daniel. He wanted to go and just see. Perhaps he had delivered him from the lions. When he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God. This is a pagan king. He said, servant of the living God. Is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? And it would seem that King Darius had heard enough from Daniel. You know, as close as, or how he consider Daniel and the closeness between them. There must have been a closeness there in how Darius viewed him. No doubt Daniel had told King Darius, witnessed to him and told him of acts of God and how God had worked before. But it seems to me that Darius had heard enough from Daniel about Daniel's God and our God and what he had previously done that the king that knew that there was something different about this God, he was living. That was different. Verses 21 to 22, then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. It's interesting to me that even in this, that was just a nice way or a proper way to address the king. And Daniel didn't forget it. Even in this situation, with respect, he approached the king. The one who had just put him in, or not long before, had followed through with the sentence. My God has sent his angel and has shut the lion's mouths, that they have not hurt me. For as much as before him, innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. There was no ill will shown to the king by Daniel. Verse 22 makes it clear that this was a miraculous intervention by God. Daniel said, God sent his angel, and they shut the mouths of the lions. And he doesn't say it, but they also took care of the paws of the lions. I don't think I'd want to be mauled by paws of a lion. Them lions couldn't hurt Daniel at all in any way because of the angel. It's interesting that Daniel, prior to this, had not defended himself. But now, knowing that God had proved his innocence and had intervened here in this situation, Daniel said he had done what was right in God's eyes, and in the king's eyes, he hadn't done him any harm. Verse 23, then was the king exceeding glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him because he believed in his God. There is significance to that statement. Now, it's easy to say, well, I believed in God. He believed in God. He believes in God. There is significance, I believe, when it says, because he believed in his God. This was more than just a statement. It was a statement that defined the whole life of Daniel. He believed in his God. It was his whole person had become that. Because of Daniel's faith, God chose in this case, and Hebrews 11 makes it clear that he doesn't choose it in every case, but he chose in this case, just as he chose in Brother Josh's case, to deliver. So much good can be said about Daniel. You know, you can look even at this sixth chapter. There's so many directions you could go with this chapter. And so many things good could be said about Daniel. So many lessons to me you learn. Yet could it be that this statement defines him better than any other because he believed in his God? Because the fact that because he believed in his God, it caused him to see God in the right way. It caused Daniel to see himself in the right way. Because he believed in his God, he accepted God's will for his life, even at an early age when he was taken captive to Babylon. Because he believed in his God, he purposed in his heart to honor God. And because he believed in his God, Daniel became a man of prayer. He became a man of integrity, a man who would not compromise. Why? Because he believed in his God. That statement defined who he was. It defined his whole person. Verse 24, and the king commanded. And they brought those men which had accused Daniel. By the way, before I finish reading that, on the way here tonight, Carol and Zach were with me, and I said, how many lions do you think were in the lion's den? I'm not going to tell you what they said. And I had a little bit of an edge on them, or I had the up on them, or how, like we say, so it wasn't really fair. How many lions do you think were in the lion's den? You think it was And I don't know what all the pictures are. Sometimes there's pictures in children's Bibles, but you think it was only two or three running around in there? I think there was a whole lot of lions in that den. You know why? Look at the rest of this verse. The king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel. How many men was it? Well, I don't know exactly. But there was a lot, I think, that were after Daniel. They cast them into the lions, or into the den of lions, them and their children and their wives. And the lions had the mastery of them and break all their bones in pieces wherever they came at the bottom of the den. If I understand that, that's before they even hit the bottom. Them lions tore into them. I think it was a large number of lions in that den. This was no human way of explaining how God had intervened. He had sent an angel. This was a miracle, what he did for Daniel. Those who try to go against God, oh, it seems like they accomplish a lot sometimes and they don't get caught. This was pretty swift punishment. And I think we can say that those who try to go against God, even if it's not as quick as this was, ultimately they will be stopped and will be judged. Verses 25 to 27. Listen and follow along. Then King Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever. In his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. This is a pagan king writing to pagan nations. Or is he still a pagan? I don't know. Maybe he was converted by this point. But he sure wrote like he was something different than a pagan. Listen as he continues. He said, speaking of God, he says, he delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth. Who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions? What a decree. All because one man believed in his God and became a man of prayer, unwilling to compromise, a man of integrity who would influence so many. In fact, he influenced the whole kingdom because that decree was sent out to the whole kingdom. One man. Someone wrote this, and I quote, "It doesn't take a lot of people to make an impact for Christ. It merely takes the right kind," unquote. And I think that's accurate. You see, you are God's person where he has placed you. You might say, well, I'll never make an impact like Daniel. Well, I don't know that any of us necessarily will. But you are God's person where he has placed you, whether it's wherever you're working, where in your family. And you are God's person as well as I am the person where God has placed me. Here at school and in my family and so on, wherever else I'm at. We are the person or the people where God has placed us. And if we are will believe in our God, and be committed to him, and be committed to being people who are people of biblical integrity, and committed to prayer life, we will be like Daniel and be an influence. It'll happen. Because God uses those kind of people to work through and as a vehicle. Well, let's quickly consider some practical steps to being people of integrity. One is to understand that, look, this has to happen on the inside first. I tried to bring that out at the beginning. It has to happen on the inside first. It's got to be in our heart because we believe in our God. And we believe in biblical integrity. It's important because I believe in my God. And it's in our hearts. It has to be there first. Secondly, we need to set guidelines before we face the problem. We have to decide what we're not going to compromise before we get to the problem. We don't want to be in the shoes where we reach the problem and say, I'm not sure what I want to do here. We need to set guidelines before facing the problem. Decide ahead of time what we won't compromise. Thirdly, these are not necessarily in a special order. Daily spend time with God. I know that's common. We say it maybe said a lot, but it's just no way around it. It's necessary. If we're going to be a person of integrity, we have to daily spend at least purpose to. And I'm not saying you miss a day, well, you're doomed or anything, but, you know, you can't be a person of integrity if you miss a day. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that that's our purpose. And as a rule, we daily spend time with God. And I think we need to be praying more than just in the morning once. It should be occurring throughout the day at times or wherever we're at. We are people of prayer. I know one thing. I can't handle it. I can't be who I'm supposed to be without it. I can't. Can't do it on my own strength. Fourthly, we need to, and I use the term that I think the younger generation uses, hang with the right people. We need to hang out with the right people, meaning those that will hold us to a high standard of accountability, to a high standard. Fifthly, like Daniel, we need to focus on God, not on what's going on around us. If Daniel would have focused on all the circumstances around, do you think he'd have survived Babylon and all that happened? I don't think so. He wouldn't have been the same man. But he focused on God. Left the circumstances up to God. It's never too late to become a person of integrity. Hopefully all of us here are. You say, well, I've blown it and messed it up. Yeah, I know, I have too. Think of those who have lost their integrity in Scripture, who were restored and started over, and become known as great men of God, Moses, David, Peter. So it's never too late. We just need to start fresh and start again and say, you know what? This is my purpose. I'm going to follow somebody. This needs to happen. This needs to be my heart's desire. This needs to be in my heart. And then I need to set some guidelines. What I won't compromise. I need to spend time with God daily. Purpose to be accountable to the right people. Hang around the right people and focus on God. And start to become more a person of integrity. The last verse says, chapter 6, so this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius, in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. You could take that verse right there and make a sermon out of it. Daniel was successful. He prospered. Who got the glory through all of this? Did Daniel get the glory? Well, he got benefits from all that happened. He was rewarded by God. But Daniel didn't ultimately get the glory. God got the glory. What did the decree that Darius sent out, who was it lifting up? It was lifting up God, not Daniel. Daniel just believed in his God. He committed to him. He committed to prayer. He was a man of integrity. And because of it, God was glorified. Daniel was just really the vehicle through which God was able to be glorified. Throughout these first six chapters of Daniel, you know, it's not about Daniel being exalted. It's not. Although Daniel was a great example, a man of impeccable integrity, committed to his God, believed in his God. He was a great man. But these chapters are not about exalting Daniel or the three Hebrew boys who were willing to stand and go into that furnace for their faith and trust in God. But the first six chapters of Daniel are really about a great God. A great God who is sovereign. And it doesn't matter who the nation is. He rules. Regardless who the nation is. And he will use his people who are willing to believe in him, committed to him, and be people of biblical integrity. Our purpose in becoming like Daniel, hopefully that's our goal, to become like a Daniel, is not to exalt ourselves, but to be a vehicle through which God can be glorified. God, help us to follow Daniel's example.
Let's stand together for prayer.